He blogs it. He breathes it. He lives it. He does live stand-ups talking about Microsoft. He spends hours recording webinars and recording videos explaining Microsoft so we don't have to. He's the only guy in Australia that can relate Office 365 tech to the masses. And most of all, he's a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional. This is the Need to Know podcast featuring Office 365, Azure, the cloud, business productivity, and more. From CIA Ops, this is your host, Robert Crane.
So welcome to the new improved CIA Ops podcast. You'll notice that we've got a new beginning. Thanks very much to Mark Keane for that. A bit more upbeat, and I'll be talking to Mark in this episode, so you'll get some idea of some of the other skills that he's had. We are into episode 92 of the Need to Know podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be talking to Mark Keane about some compliance issues around Office 365 and some of the features that are available. But before we get into that, bit of a quick editorial, let you know that I have returned from presenting at Office 365 Nation over in the US in Seattle. Did a number of presentations there. They're up on my blog, and I'll make those available, the URL available, so you can go and take a look at those and download the decks and have a look. One of the other big improvements or features that have come out is Office 2016. So Office 2016 for PC is now available through Office 365, but there is some confusion around when this is actually rolled out to customers. So if you have customers on an E-plan, they have Pro Plus, they will typically have to wait until 2016. But if you put yourself on first release, you can get the latest version immediately. So again, I've done a blog post on that, hopefully covers off all the questions you may have about that, and go and have a look at that. I'll put the link in the show notes. Some other Office 365 related news is that we are looking forward to seeing the new Office 365 Planner, a bit of a vamped up tasks thing that's going to be rolled in as an independent service. Again, the link will be in the show notes, but it looks very much like Delve, so it would seem to me that Microsoft is moving in the direction of having more and more of its services available in a Delve-style card arrangement. So if you haven't started looking at Delve, certainly recommend that you do that. Probably the biggest news that we've all been waiting for is the announcement of the new OneDrive for Business Sync client. OneDrive for Business has had a major makeover. We'll see the interface also changing on the web, but the main thing is a new sync client, which overcomes many, many of the issues the older sync client has. So it has selective sync, can do much larger files, and removes a lot of the file limitations that we've seen before. So at the moment, that's in preview. I'll put the link to the preview up in the show notes. You can go and have a download and have a play with it. Not for production yet, but Microsoft is committing to have that in production before the end of 2015. So I think that'll make a big difference, because what it'll mean is it'll certainly remove one of the weaker aspects of Office 365 and make it an even more compelling product. So if you're interested in the OneDrive for Business Sync client, remember, very much in a preview state, you can certainly go and have a play with it. I've been doing that. Looks very good so far. Now, quickly before we get into our episode, we'll have a bit of a chat here about how you can get in contact with me. Best option is typically via my contact page, www.ciaops.com/contact. But you can also connect with me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA, and of course, I encourage people to connect with me via Skype for Business. You can do that via admin@ciaops365.com. Appreciate any iTunes reviews, and always looking to improve, looking for feedback, what sort of guests, what sort of topics. If you're interested in coming on and having a bit of a chat about any technology or business topic, certainly welcome that. So don't be afraid to get in contact with me about that. But with that, let's get into this episode and talk to Mark. And once again, thank Mark very much for the new intros and the outros that are part of this podcast. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the CIA Ops. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined by Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Excellent. It's late in the night here. We're doing a bit of a late one to make sure that everything's quiet in the background. So as we always do here, Mark, on the Need to Know podcast, I'll get you to introduce yourself to our audience, let them know who you are and basically what you do.
So I'm a Microsoft Cloud consultant. I've been working in the Microsoft Cloud space for a number of years, probably probably roughly, in fact, I forget exactly how long, probably about 5 years or so, ever since the beginning of Office 365 and the BPOS days, when Azure was before the current version, which is the portal, which is out now. And I specialize in the IT pro sort of area / DevOps.
So Mark's been, I sort of met Mark, I think it was a tech ed, wasn't it, where we first ran into each other?
Yeah, that was back in 2013, I think, up at the Gold Coast. Yeah, the last
real tech ed before they changed it into Ignite and went all online. So it was, and then we kept in touch from there, and Mark's been very helpful, especially in the PowerShell stuff and some of the more in-depth Exchange and hybrid stuff. So I thought he'd be a great guest to come along and focus on a topic that is, I think, getting more and more interest from people I deal with anyway, and that's around the compliance features, especially with Exchange Online. So in the stuff that you see in the businesses you work with, the customers you work with, I mean, what's the requirement for compliance? Why do we need to have this compliance these days that you're seeing out there?
Well, the biggest one, which has just crept up on businesses, which they didn't expect, is the Australian privacy new laws that came out last year. And that's all about sort of keeping information from different people, private information. And the big one there is credit card details. And the obvious one is credit card details can be easily sent to a company via email, and also sent out of a company via email. Now, for any company to store credit card details, whether it's in an email system or whether it's on a file server or a database or anywhere, they need to be PCI compliant. And I can guarantee most companies out there are not PCI compliant, and just the fact that they're receiving an email from one of their staff members on their own email system puts them in breach. So this is why I think is the number one reason that I think it's important to be compliant when it comes to Exchange Online.
Well, I think the thing is what people don't appreciate these days is so much of our communications now is electronic. Now, back in the old days, obviously, there's lots of paper and shuffling paper and letters and faxes and all that, but it's all gone digital. Now, the other thing, too, I think you would agree, is just the pure explosion of digital information, because it's so readily, easily saved that people generate so much of it now.
Yep, exactly, and probably too much. I mean, why would you send a credit card number across the public internet through an email system? I mean, you and I both know that email is not 100% secure, or it's not secure at all. It's public, it's plain text over the public internet. But you know what, people out there that basically do it, and they become so accustomed to the internet, they'll just put anything out there, and it's a bit worrying, really.
Well, I think it's the convenience that makes people sort of forget and overlook the security. I mean, it's so easy to send things in email, and I think we've all sent emails that we regret, or, again, people don't appreciate that when they attach a document and send it via email, what's actually happening is they are giving their IP or giving that attachment firstly to the other party, but that party can then take that electronic information and then they can forward it to anybody they want without the initial sender having any idea what's happened to it. So in this sort of world where we're seeing more and more attempts to control or, you know, make sure that you get value for your information, again, we're sort of faced with this dichotomy of wanting to share everything, but suddenly having the convenience of being so easy to share everything when, in some cases, people don't want that to happen.
Yeah, it's a massive worry. I mean, like, what do you do? I mean, before you know it, your stuff's out there. You've sent it to somebody and you just don't know what happens to it after that. So you just got to be careful what you send out there, I guess, and just sort of keep it as much cards to your chest as possible.
So is the drive for compliance being driven from a management level, are you finding? Is that the reason, or is it an auditor, or is it the businesses now decide they have to conform to the privacy standard? What sort of awoken this need to be compliant, especially around emails?
Look, I'll put my hand, but I'm not a legal person. However, I was working for a company last year when these new laws came out, and the legal person in the company came to me and said, look, we've got this issue here. We've got a big stack of documents here, the new regulations from the privacy laws. And one of the things we're really concerned about is credit card details. So obviously this lady is legal. She's gone over the whole thing. She's read it with a fine tooth comb, and credit card details were the number one thing which they found they had to actually lock it down with. So that was one of the things we went through last year with this company. And to the point where you put it in, whether it's sending sort of to somebody internal in the company or whether it's sending somebody external, and it's quite user-friendly. It's quite and basically it stops anybody. As soon as you type a credit card number in, it's a drop-down box comes up that you've got a credit card number in there. Take it out, which is called a mail tip. So, it works quite well, and Microsoft have got this set up with Exchange Online. So, and I guess a lot of people don't know that, and so we're basically trying to join the dots between what's required by law and what's available out there, which a lot of people don't really understand.
I think part of it also is the fact now that these sort of enterprise or these sort of advanced features are now available with Exchange Online, where typically most businesses would have never had access to these sort of facilities because they would have been running a standard version of Exchange. They wouldn't have the enterprise version. But now, thanks to the cloud, we get all these sort of facilities mainly, again, with our plans. Now, that said, there are some plans that don't include a lot of this compliance stuff. So most of the stuff we're talking about here with Exchange Online is required with the enterprise plan, so typically with an E3, an E4, or Exchange Online standalone. So they're not in the business plans, the small business side of things. So that you just need to be careful with. But again, it's one of the reasons that you should always be going out and looking to purchase or looking to sell the E3 licenses. So you mentioned there that the credit card stuff as well. So can you give us an idea of sort of how do we go setting that up in our Exchange Online?
It's part of what's called the DLP or Data Loss Prevention area of the Office 365 portal. And there's a lot of templates that Microsoft have got. One of them is called the Australian Privacy Principles or something similar. But you can go in deep and you can deep dive in there and can customize or configure your own sort of rule or policy based on their existing templates. But they have done a lot of work in there by putting the templates in there, so you can follow that through. So it's fairly straightforward. You can do testing in there as well, so you can turn it on and not actually have it do anything and let you know what it's doing before it actually does anything. It's all done via the GUI. There's no PowerShell involved. It's not scary.
Could you do it with PowerShell?
I think you can. I've never done it before, but I'm pretty sure you can. I mean,
because you can pretty much do anything these days with PowerShell. But I suppose part of it is that my understanding is that you have the standard policies which revolve around credit cards and the privacy laws and that. But you can also go in and create your own policies and apply them if you want.
Yeah, exactly. So you can do specific ones. I think another one is like Medicare or healthcare details, social security numbers. And again, I mean, most of this all comes out of the States in the US. So I don't know how accurate it's going to be for a lot of the Australian part of it. But there's a lot available to go in there and customize, and it works at the transport level. So whether it's going outside the company or coming inside the company from outside, And the other part to this too is once it detects some of this information that's coming in or out at the transport level, it'll actually reply back with an email saying no, it's blocked, and it'll have a reason why it's blocked. So you can put a customized message in there to the person from outside as to why, for example.
Well, I think part of it too is there's a business opportunity in here because obviously I think compliance is a fairly new experience for many people in Australia. I think it's been part of the US environment, thanks to the HIPAA and those sort of laws, security laws, because of the Enron collapse, and that was when that was enacted. So it's a bit new for us out here, but that said, I think there's a business opportunity for people who do understand it, who know it, and can configure it in Office 365 to basically bundle it up and make a service of doing that, because I do see more and more demand for the ability to have businesses that are compliant, whether it's a one-man business or a 1,000-person business, it's that important now that this information is kept and that you perform to things like the privacy law. So I think it's a very important thing, and you're right, most people are overlooking it. And it's not difficult to implement, to use, to set up with Exchange Online, but I think a lot of it's got more to do around understanding or setting up the policies, the strategies. You know, how do you want it conform? What do you actually need to do? Because you can certainly turn it all on, but then, you know, what does it do and how do you monitor it, I think, is more the key.
Yeah, a lot of people don't really understand. I mean, like, as you said before, they overlook it. They don't understand. I mean, if I was running a business, I would make sure either myself or somebody else I employed sort of understands this type of thing by having a legal department or something. But I guess there's quite a few businesses out there which don't have the luxury of having a legal sort of person or legal department in the business. And all of a sudden, if they get audited, they're screwed. So, so we've got to really sort of go to market on this and create awareness that, hey, there are these laws out there and people sort of have to be compliant, not by choice, but it's a regulation.
And I think the difficulty is most of this stuff is turned off by default. I don't think it's difficult to turn it on, but it's a matter of that you do need to be aware of it, go in and turn it on. There's no cost to doing that, and it's certainly something that should be done. And especially if you're handling private information, if you're looking, you're dealing with credit cards, and even without that, I think it's worthwhile turning this sort of stuff on. I think probably a good place to start for a lot of people that they can definitely equate a direct ROI would be in the area of legal hold. So again, do you want to give people, you know, who are listening a bit of an idea what what legal hold actually is and what the benefits are?
So legal hold is I think it's a bit of both. So you've got in place hold and litigation hold. Now it's a replacement for journaling. Now, just in very brief, those who don't know what journaling is, back in the olden days with the old version of Exchange on prem, journaling was a feature you turned on, and it basically captured every single message that came in and out of the company from any user and any mailbox. So it all captured every single email to a single mailbox, and this mailbox obviously filled up quite big, but it's for the purpose of compliance and regulation to have a history and a record of every single email in the system. Now, journaling doesn't exist anymore for Exchange Online, and they've come out with a new solution instead, which is the litigation hold. You turn on litigation hold, and it essentially for days, and it keeps email, does exactly the same thing, keeps email for a period of those days that you set. So let's say 7 years, for example. And it'll keep those emails in such a way so you can call back on them and do an e-discovery search on emails for if there's any court cases or legal requirements. You've got that information kept. And that's another one which, if you read up on it, if you've got the time to go online and read them in the Australian business law, you are legally required, that I can see, to keep, say, financial records for up to 7 years. And some financial records are kept in email. They're sent back and forth. So a lot of companies tend to keep email for 7 years.
And I think the way I like to explain it to a lot of business owners is the experience they generally have is where they need or whether they could utilize legal hold is the fact that most employers have had a situation where they have a disgruntled employee who goes in and basically deletes every email that they received, deletes everything out of the deleted items, make sure they purge their inbox, and then walk out the door and leave the business in the lurch without the information they want. So using legal hold in that case, so turning it on beforehand, as soon as the mailbox is created, means that no matter what the employee does to the information in that mailbox, it's always able to be generally recovered, or the information in there, the emails, can be recovered. So to me, that's the very first thing I would be telling people as a benefit of legal hold that has a practical implication. There's certainly plenty of other options there, but to me, that's the very first thing and one of the major benefits that you would look at implementing and purchasing a license that does include the legal hold option, which again is typically E3, E4, and Exchange Online Plan 2.
For sure, definitely.
And I think that a lot of this is a matter of, like I said, explaining it to businesses. So a lot of resellers I see will try and sell Office 365 on price, and then what the reality is the needs that the business actually demand or require, an E3 or above to get this compliance option. And I think that basically, if that was explained to the business owner and they were made knowledgeable of what features there were, they'd certainly want to use it. Because when you look at it, the price that you're paying per mailbox to get a facility where you've effectively got an unlimited mailbox and an unlimited store of any change in the email forever is pretty powerful for a few bucks a month, isn't it?
It's a no-brainer. I mean, why would you not sign up for that feature? Exactly. And business owner.
And the other thing too is, even if you delete the mailbox or delete the user and you've got it on legal hold, that information is generally retained again forever using the right sequence. So again, it means that all this digital information that you've accumulated, that you're responsible for, you may have to provide, you can outsource all that management to an extent to Microsoft. You know, they've put it in their systems, they've given you the tools and the portal to run discoveries, to turn this stuff on and off as required, give other people access to that information. I agree with you 100%. It is a no-brainer that every business, in inverted commas, really should have.
Yep, exactly.
So it's stunning that people haven't got it. So I think that, you know, that's the sort of thing that the reason why we look at these more advanced licenses. But so we've got our legal hold, which is basically retaining our information. We've got our the basic DLP that's, you know, looking in the emails for things like credit cards and privacy breaches and those sort of things. But what else can DLP do? I mean, I know it can do other things. I mean, what else in your experience have you used DLP for?
That's a very good question.
Have you used it at all for document fingerprinting?
No.
So one of the things that DLP can do is, what you can do is you can take a template of a document and upload it into the administration area. And say, for example, you're working with medical records. So maybe you've got a medical report or some sort of report you've got to send out to another bureau. And what you can do is you can upload a template of this document into the DLP. And basically what you can tell it is, every time you see this document, take this action, alert me, don't send it, throw up a warning. So not only can it look inside and look at credit card numbers, for example, but it can also, you can upload your own template and you can use that as a fingerprint method to see what the actual attachments are going outside the business.
I've heard of this before. So this is similar to like how antivirus works.
To an extent. And again, the idea is it's a compliance thing that is being added by Microsoft. Because you think about it, again, what's happening is typically most businesses are just sending emails willy-nilly, and as long as users have access to it, they're potentially sending out information that could involve trouble for the organization. Now, putting a layer of protection over the top that basically can look at the documents and say, you know what, and this looks very much like a document that should be flagged or shouldn't be taking this sort of action, makes a lot of sense. And once again, we come back to that point where we're talking about, this is, you know, pennies on the dollar for the power that you're getting to be able to do this.
So this is interesting. This is like similar to what IRM is, information rights management, similar, where the business can like put in one document or several documents that are very, very important to the business that can't be leaked, and upload them to DLP and basically make sure that these documents are not sent in or out of the company or leaked, essentially.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's the whole idea with that data loss prevention. So the idea is you don't allow the data, whether it's a credit card, someone else's credit card, their, you know, some other private information, but I think a lot of it that I see is really, really powerful is the document fingerprinting. Because you think about it, you know, you upload a document, then an email with an attachment is sent. The machine then has to, or the system then has to look at it, compare the two documents, come up with some sort of score using machine learning, and then basically flag it or let it through the system. And all that's happening in the background, and you've got no idea it's happening. You've turned it on, and again, we're paying a couple of bucks per month to provide that sort of level of protection. Again, it's a no-brainer from my end.
So I'm just wondering, can you actually fine tune the threshold for that? I'm wondering, because if you had a document, let's say, and you want to upload it to the, what's the terminology again called?
The document fingerprinting.
Document fingerprinting, yes. Sorry, if you upload it to document fingerprinting, like a document, let's say, the user changes, say, one word, the document fingerprint, the scanning engine will look at that document and think it's changed. But I wonder if you can set a threshold to say, right, one word's changed or
no, I think it's my understanding is, I'm no expert and I've fiddled with it, but I think, again, it looks at the template you've provided and it uses machine learning to look at it and say, okay, this is similar, this is not similar. And I think the way it does it is, again, you know, like spam in a way, it creates a score based on the document
right.
that it sees going through and says, you know what, the match on the document that's being
set fairly close.
Is close enough to a threshold, I'm going to flag this. And I think I believe it has, you know, different levels of warnings and all that sort of stuff, but it's better to be safe than sorry. So I think that there are these possibilities. And obviously, if the person changes enough, it will get through the system. If the person decides to encrypt it in a zip, it's not going to be able to necessarily open it. So there are always ways around this, but again,
yeah.
As a free service, as a free add-on, as part of the Advanced Exchange licenses, again, it makes so much sense to turn it on like the basic DLP and the legal hold immediately to give yourself this sort of protection and then investigate it as an option to really ramp that up if you need to protect that information inside your, you know, inside your business.
Yeah, I you know what, I love that feature, document fingerprinting. I mean, the fact that it's not an exact match, because that's part of the problem with antivirus is it'll look for an exact match of, say, ones and zeros. If it sees that match, it's bang, it's a virus. But viruses change. If one tiny bit of it changes, well, then it's not going to pick it up. But with this, it's machine learning. It's a similarity. You set it. It's like, I guess it's like a fuzzy lookup thing of Excel where you can tell it to look for data based on a percentage. If it's sort of a close match, well then bang, don't let it through. So that's actually quite powerful.
The only thing is I think you don't get that granular control. I think that may come, but I think it's a little bit of black magic at the moment that Microsoft controls. I mean, it's
right.
giving you some basic stuff. I mean, there's no thresholds. It would be nice to be able to tune it, but again, it's a good start, especially if it's, you know, basically included in the plan. The other thing is I believe DLP, if it's not already there, is also coming to OneDrive and SharePoint. So what that means is if you share a document from within your OneDrive or within your SharePoint to someone outside the business, and then that then doesn't conform to DLP policies, then that same flag can be thrown and warned and actions can be taken. So the DLP started off in Exchange with attachments, but now is being extended into the storage capacities, or the storage silos within Office 365.
The whole entire sort of gateway level.
Correct.
Everything.
And I think this is part of the compliance discussion we're having is
yeah.
that it's not just Exchange, it's
yeah.
also SharePoint, it's also Skype for Business, all this sort of stuff. Again, you're getting this compliance engine which is built underneath everything and the different services that can then take advantage of it. So again, if you have this need to be compliant, which everybody is more and more these days, you should be looking at these advanced plans which include these facilities, and then obviously you've got them, you need to make sure that they're turned on. So that's the second thing. And I think, you know, once you sort of explain and you understand that, which is hopefully what we're doing here in some way, people begin, oh, that's a real benefit. I really need to start using that. I really need to turn it on. I really need to understand what it does and how well it works so that I can take advantage of it. Because so many people that I see have an advanced license and they haven't turned on many of the features. And it's like, you know, again, you still think it's cheap, but look at all these options we can turn on for you. And that just blows you out of the water as to how cheap it really is.
That's why we got a job still now, I guess.
Yeah, well,
part of the reason.
And I think that's part, and that's the IT pro discussion, is to say these systems don't require you to worry about hardware and drivers and, you know, LAN connections and those sort of things. It's really about this high-level business consulting, which is around the compliance and understanding that. Now, a lot of that also is the advantage is because we're now built on a Office 365 platform, which is a standard, that means if we can automate so much of this now using your favorite tool, PowerShell, for example, that once you get it right, all you've got to do then is, again, you can export the policies from one place and import them in another and then implement them with Office 365. So a good example is I see a lot of resellers complaining that Office 365, you know, spam filtering doesn't work. And the next question I ask them is, well, have you ever gone in and configured it or tweaked it or had a look at the settings or made any modifications? They said, no, I just expected it to work. I don't even know what to change. So it's, yes, you know, you and I laugh exactly, but on premise, they would be doing fiddling with all that sort of stuff. It's interesting how intimidated they are by this sort of system when really they shouldn't be. They spend the time, investigate it, create a script for it, and then just blow it across every other installation they've done. It seems very simple to me.
I mean, you can't really break it as such. You're not going to like shut down all of Exchange Online just because of what you're doing and playing with it. The worst that's going to happen is a few emails might sort of be put in the wrong area. But at the end of the day, I mean, these features are, you're right, these features are there. They're provided to you. And I think most of the time people aren't even utilizing them.
And I think the reality is, unfortunately, is, you know, a lot of customers who are the smaller end of town have really, you know, had very simple systems, and now they've got systems that can do so much more, but they're not being enabled. They're not taking advantage of this sort of stuff, and generally, that's, you know, you're underutilizing the service. And just think of the stuff that they're adding. So the DLP came in for Exchange. Now it's being added to SharePoint. It'll be added to something else. Then they'll add another feature. So they're adding, for example, the new facility that will actually go in and actually open inbound attachments to see if they do registry calls and try and do crypto locker and all that sort of stuff. So all this sort of stuff is being incorporated into the product. And typically on the advanced plans, you pay nothing for it. You get those features automatically. So again, another great reason for this sort of service and why hopefully more people should be adopting it.
So do you want to talk about that? You just raised something that was quite interesting. The attachment thing, which is coming out, if not, I think it's part of Office 2016, is it? I think, where if you get an attachment, you can open it up in sort of like a sandbox or something, which I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's correct. My understanding is that, again, I think it's part of the advanced feature. I think it's called the advanced threat protection, I think, and it's with the more advanced plans. It might be an add-on cost. But my understanding is what it actually does, when the attachment comes in, before it gets to your inbox, if it looks suspicious, it takes it into this advanced threat monitoring. And that advanced threat monitoring, I believe, typically maybe creates a virtual environment, then opens the attachment in that virtual environment to see if it does non-standard things, like make registry calls, try and encrypt files, do things it's not supposed to. So like a PDF, when you open it, if it's a bad PDF, we'll suddenly try and execute JavaScript and then try and get elevated privileges and then go off and do nasty things. So by running it in this sandboxed environment in Microsoft servers, they can identify it, so, oh, that's bad. And another trick apparently is what they do is they send you an email with what looks to be a benign link, but then what they do is they change it at the back end later on so that when you actually come back and click to it, the link is actually different. So that the having a good link gets through the initial protection to get into your inbox, and then, you know, a couple of hours later they change that link to go to something malicious, so it's already in your inbox. So Microsoft's doing these sort of testing in the background, and again, these advanced features a huge benefit. I think that, again, a lot of people just aren't turning on, aren't enabling, and aren't even considering in a lot of cases.
So is this feature where the attachments like run in like a sandbox, like a virtual environment, just briefly, is that for the thick install of Office as well as the...
No, my understanding is it's all back-end stuff. It's all done on the, you know, inbound
Exchange
SMTP
side.
On the Exchange side, because they can throw lots of machines at it. They can throw virtual environments. The whole idea is once it gets to your inbox, it's too late.
Right. You know what I mean? So at the transport level, basically, right. they're scanning it at that level.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And again, I think that's, again, it starts off as an extra service or an add-in or advanced service, but it makes its way through the whole service. And Microsoft spent their time developing this because of the crypto locker issue. So typically a crypto locker file is sent as a PDF attachment, and it looks benign, but obviously when users are encouraged to click it, it then goes off and runs things, encrypts their files. and it just goes straight through every antivirus, because as you said before, antivirus is based on signatures, which means it needs to know about the bad stuff before it can test for it or scan for it. Now this way, they're being proactive and sort of saying, you know what, we're actually going to, this looks suspicious to us, we're going to create a sandbox, we're going to open it up and see what it does. If it does things it's not supposed to, then we're going to
encrypts all the files, for example.
Yeah, or it's, you know, makes registry calls or starts doing things outside of what it should be, then Microsoft can flag that much quicker and help build its database and protect its users. So this is what you need to do now. You really need to open stuff and see what it actually does, because the stuff, you know, the bad guys are doing such clever stuff with this. So the only way to do it is to open it up in a sandbox and say, oh yeah, that's bad. Oh, we won't do that. We can just delete that, you know, virtual environment and delete the attachment and make sure the user doesn't get this file.
And I guess the next thing you're probably thinking too is, okay, comes in, the comes in at the transport level in the sandbox. Microsoft opens it up and runs a check on to make sure it's healthy. But then viruses can attack that surface. But I mean, I find that hard to believe, because a sandbox or a virtual machine or a container these days is 100% isolated when it comes to everything else.
Well, I think Microsoft, obviously, you know, they're in this. They're a pretty big organization. They've got a lot of security people, and again, you would hope they know how to do it and create an isolated. And VM is the perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
Nothing's impervious, but again, you would assume that they've set it up correctly and they're testing this all the time. But I think the real key to it is the way they can automate it. They can let the machine learning, they can let the scripts, they can, you know, do this sort of thing in the background. And anything that protects the user and gets rid of these nasties is got to be a plus. And we go back to the original point again, it's more or less part of the service that you're getting for pennies on the dollar.
So okay, so that's not out just yet, is it? Or is it coming?
No, I think it's coming and it's being added. It's an add-on at the moment, but I wouldn't surprise me. I believe it's going to be rolled into the E5 plan, the new E5 plan that's coming, that includes Power BI licenses and the best of the best of the best, will also include this advanced threat protection.
And we're getting up to around the 20, I think last time I checked was $26 for E3. This is Australian pricing. So the E5 plan is going to be nearly over the, I'm guessing, over $30 mark per mailbox.
Yeah, but you never know. Again, if Microsoft wants people to adopt these tools and use them, it may match the price. I don't know how its pricing strategy would work. So, but even so, you know, considering the power that you get, and again, remember that we can mix and match the licenses, so not everybody may need this level of protection on their mailbox, but to me it makes great sense. It's still very cheap, but again, it would be an additional cost, but I can see this sort of technology, once it's being vetted and totally automated, making its way throughout the whole system, because it makes the world better for everybody. So I certainly see it potentially being rolled out for everybody.
Yeah. The other one which I wanted to just run by you is the feature called Lockbox, probably several months ago.
Yep.
And Lockbox is basically where it's protecting, I think you actually told me about this a while ago, is protecting customers' data, so not even Microsoft support can get access to it.
Yeah, so my understanding is that what the users will be able to do on certain plans is they'll be able to put basically a lock on their data, which means that if they open a service request and Microsoft are required to access the customer's data in any way, Microsoft will have to place a request back with the customer for the customer to unlock their data to allow that access, and that will be fully audited, fully tracked. So when it comes to compliance and privacy, you'll definitely know when Microsoft or anyone, generally they need access to your data to work on it, because you'll have to unlock that data and allow them to access that information. That's going to further level of control. Now obviously that's going to slow down the support slightly, because they've got to wait for the box to be unlocked. And my understanding is you can choose a time period that how long that data will stay released for and all that sort of stuff. So again, yet another additional control that users can have over, you know, the access to their data.
So that control, let me ask you a question. That control, to say, right, okay, so let's say I'm a user, I'm a customer of Office 365, support want to go access to my data for some reason, I've logged a support request, and they put a request through to get access to the data, and I tick a box or whatever it is to say, okay, you guys have access to it. Is that a technically impossible thing that they can't get access to the data, or is it purely policy driven only? Like, is it done by encryption? I guess.
My understanding is the way that works is that Microsoft at the back end, if they need access to the data, they have to submit a request. They are then given access for a time period to the customer's data. It's all ordered. It's all tracked. Two-factor authentication. So yeah, it actually is.
It's
not just a policy thing. It's actually restricting your data. So Microsoft's now surfacing that interface to the customer, where the customer can now sit in the loop and basically turn access on and off to the data. So imagine it like an encryption key and say, okay, we're giving you the final encryption keys to your data. We can't get to your data until you release those encryption keys to us.
This sounds very familiar to two terminologies which I love. One of them is just-in-time admin, and the other one is just-enough admin. So, I mean, the differences there is just-in-time admin is basically saying, this is basically what Microsoft use themselves internally for their own technical people. So this is not even talking about customers, but this is what they use internally. So let's say an engineer has to install like an update on a server, for example, in Microsoft. They're given just-in-time admin, which means between, say, 8 o'clock at night and, say, 10 o'clock, they've given admin privileges. And then just enough admin means there's just enough admin privileges to do their task, to install whatever they need to. So there's two terminologies which I'm hearing that they're going to release out to the tenants.
And I think my understanding too is that they've brought both of those recently to Azure. So Azure, you can do that inside your tenant. You can allocate somebody to be an admin for a two-hour period and give them just enough admin rights to do that. So they can work for 2 hours as an admin using their normal account, but then after that time period, they automatically revert back to being a normal user and can't make any of the admin changes. So again, I think this is the benefit of we're going to see of Microsoft bringing this sort of compliance, this sort of security into the consumer environment that they're using now and testing with their own data.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, they've obviously tried and tested it. And don't forget, too, Microsoft have been doing managing and running data centers for over 30 years.
Yep. And again, you ask people, you know, what's the biggest online, one of the biggest online networks that, you know, private networks that there were that Microsoft basically has been running for years, and most people scratch their heads and it's not Azure, it's not Office 365. It actually turns out that it's Xbox. And Xbox has been up and running for a long, long time and has got very demanding users. So Microsoft certainly has the experience when it comes to running these sort of very large multinational environments.
I thought it might have been Hotmail.
Yeah, it could have been. But no, definitely Xbox, because they obviously built that themselves and utilized that. And you imagine the demands that are on that generally 24/7. So again, Microsoft certainly has that experience. And as we know, it has more data centers generally than AWS and Google put together. So they certainly know what they're doing. And I think the compliance and the security side of it is certainly something that stands the Microsoft product like Office 365 out from its competitors. And when you actually go to the, you know, the Office 365 Trust Center and have a look at the work that Microsoft's doing, look at some of the videos of how they protect the data and the steps they take to even ensure physical access is controlled to these data centers, I think, you know, it would give people a lot of comfort to see what's actually being done.
Yep. Actually, just that Xbox thing that you mentioned, I'm just going back about that. So they set up Xbox, and it's probably like they're their own sort of master of their own sort of demon, because they set the Xbox network up, and I guess that's probably the reason why they've had all the outages. Remember last Christmas time, they had an outage because of the denial of service attack, but that was because both PlayStation and Xbox went down at the same time. So it wasn't just Microsoft, but obviously it was some hacker out there which basically was targeting both Xbox and PlayStation, because it's that sort of target audience that they wanted to affect. And so,
I mean, nobody's immune from these sort of attacks. And I think, again, you know, the way you look at it is you know, most people don't understand or appreciate the real breadth and depth and time period that Microsoft has invested in this. So I think it's not something new. It's not, you know, BPOS wasn't the first online Microsoft network that was running. I mean, and again, people need to realize that this is building on building on building, and it's just getting better and better and better, as some of the points we've brought out here today.
Actually, I have actually noticed, you can see the trend here. I mean, all right. So back in on-prem days, it was all completely siloed. You'd have Exchange. Okay, the only relationship was Active Directory. So you'd have Exchange, you'd have SharePoint, you'd have a Link server, and that was all separate things that you managed, you installed. Now they've moved. They went to BPOS, and it was sort of still separate. They went to version, I think, 15. It sort of is separate, but just recently, everything's sort of molding together. You know what I mean? You've got the DLP thing, which started off with Exchange, and it's coming across to OneDrive, and it's coming across to SharePoint. You've also got the other thing, which I've noticed that came out just recently, which is Office 365 Groups. And that's like a conglomerate of Exchange Online and SharePoint together to help people collaborate. I mean, they're merging all of these existing Box products together as one Office 365, which is intertwined between each other. And I think it's actually quite powerful, because gone are the days we install this on-prem. And in fact, you probably couldn't, because it's so intertwined. There's so many working parts and so many connections now between all of the different components.
Well, I mean, for me, it's been in a case of, if you just look at SharePoint, I mean, SharePoint now is basically on-prem as a subset of what's available in the cloud. Now, SharePoint used to be able to install on a single server, but these days you need a database server, a web front end, you need a Office Online server,
all the scary stuff,
AD, and that's a lot of work to maintain at a back end just to get a collaboration system up and running. When you're competing against people like Slack and other web-based ones, it's like, you know, it just takes too long to spin up this sort of stuff. But, and I think, again, you know, it's so easy for, you know, customers to have a look at it. So, oh, this doesn't work like files and folders and this. I want an eDrive back. I think that a lot of them have to move their practices into the future using this sort of software. And again, a point I would make is that many people, although they use Excel, they don't use more than the most basic features. So you talk to people about, you know, pivot tables, pivot maps, pivot charts. Most people don't have much idea about, but that code's, that sort of functionality has been in Excel for years, and they're not taking advantage of it. So again, I think most people have far more technology than they need. It's just a matter of switching it on, spending a bit of time to invest to learn it, and then make the most of it. I really think that's what the focus should be for a lot of businesses and resellers.
But then, yeah, trying to get the time, I guess, and sort of investment to do that, I guess a lot of businesses have still got the, as long as they got the basics and they've got the mentality that, hey, as long as it works and as long as nothing changes, well, nothing's going to break and we still can make money. And yeah.
Yeah, but I think the difference here is that to be competitive in this world, you need to make sure you're using your resources to their full extent. And I think that's the differentiation. And the business can certainly do what you're talking about, but it does need to keep progressing. And like IT professionals as well, the technology is changing so rapidly that a competitor can potentially leverage a functionality that's new to the product, and that could then give them the leap. So again, to be competitive, you don't need to spend all your days doing it, but you certainly need to be aware of it. And if you're a technology person, you especially need to make sure that you're across a lot of this stuff. And I mean, that's a subject for another podcast, how to keep up to date. But again, the secret, I think, is again, you've just got to focus on being less but going much deeper, and then partnering up with others or networking with others who can fill in those gaps that you may not be able to get across.
So yeah, it's I guess it's a bit of both. I mean, there's the first thing is getting businesses to realize the potential of what the technology they've currently got and what else it can do, because a lot of them they're running their day-to-day businesses, they've got their meetings that they're running, and I guess most of them sort of like think, oh yeah, whatever, they don't really sort of care or take the time to want to sort of get to know what else is available. But then trying to sort of get them into that frame of mind to say, right, okay, we've got this technology like Office 365, it can do all these other things. How are we going to get them into the frame of mind to actually know what else is sort of available? I guess media is one thing, and
As you know, you're right, you know, we do blog posts, we do podcasts like this, we try and get it out, we talk to people, and they're not going to adopt it initially, but I think the important thing is to get the information out there and try and put it in the context of the business, which is something that Microsoft may not always do successfully. So understand, hopefully we've explained things like legal hold and DLP in a way that it equates to a business. So that's all we can do, and we certainly encourage people to contact me directly or yourself when you give your details and ask more questions, get more details. I'm sure we'll both be happy to share that information, and again, it helps us understand the product. So again, I think that's, you know, that's all we can really do is share the information and ask for people's feedback and say, well, if you don't understand or it's not clear, please let us know so that we can go back and make sure that we clarify it for you. So again, it's never going to be straightforward and easy, but again, the idea is our job as IT people is to try and make it as simple as possible and take all those worries away from the end user.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think, like I said, we've had a good discussion here. We could go on all night talking about all this sort of stuff, and we've just covered two or three options in Exchange Online. So what we'll do is I'll ask Mark maybe to give us a bit of a summary on what we've talked about and, you know, how we can, what the benefit is and how easy it is to enable. Then I'll get him to share his details on how you can follow what he's doing, how to keep in contact with him, and then we'll round off. So do you want to give us a bit of a summary, Mark, to finish off?
So I've talked about, yeah, Exchange Online compliance. So we're talking about document fingerprinting, where it's at the transport level of exploit, you can upload documents and transport level. We've also talked about legal hold and litigation hold, so retaining messages legally or for compliance reasons for up to 7 years or longer or less. And also talked about the DLP, which is data loss protection, which is part of Exchange Online as well, which is all there, which can be set up to block, say, credit card numbers, for example, and other sensitive private and personal information coming in or out of Office 365 Exchange Online. So yeah, it's been a pleasure, and I'm Mark Keane, and I'm on Twitter, which is at Mark Keane. So it's Mark with a C. So it's MarkKean. Or I'm at Ripe currently at the moment, which is a Microsoft partner, licensing partner and a Microsoft services partner. Email there is Mark, MARC.Keane, KEAN, at Ripe, RHIPE.com. Or on Twitter. So yeah, I'm available sort of 24/7, whichever, except when I'm sleeping.
Which we don't do, we're IT professionals, but
basically not.
Yeah, all right. Well, I thank Mark very much for his time. Hopefully we can get him back on, and we're certainly looking for some input, some feedback, some questions. Mark's able to go deep on a lot of technical topics like PowerShell and Exchange Online, Hybrid Exchange, all the really cool stuff, I suppose, you know. So again, don't be afraid to contact me or contact him directly, ask questions, and maybe if we can put together enough of these, we can do another show and go a bit deeper, because I think there's a lot of people that would benefit from that knowledge. So again, I'll thank Mark for his time, and also make sure that I get those details out on the blog post that goes with this podcast. But from me, if you need to contact me, you can find me also on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. The best place to keep up with the stuff that I do day in and day out is at my blog, which is blog.ciaops.com. And I will thank everybody very much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. You can directly support this podcast by purchasing guides from the selection available. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately from www.ciaops.com/publications. To provide feedback on this episode or to make any comments, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.